Hey Caffeinators, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question, comment, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com, or you can find us at our website, vettechcafe.com. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, Caffeinators. Thanks again for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe again today. Dave, how's it going?
It's going well down here. This is my first week back to work after kind of having almost a week off of my COVID restrictions. Not that I have had COVID, but I traveled, so I had to kind of cut back. But getting back into it and, you know, kind of doing some different things this time, this week, instead of just working ER shifts, I worked a surgery shift. I worked in internal medicine today. So I'm kind of spreading my wings and
good,
getting reinvigorated at looking at all those different fields that we can see in our practice.
Nice.
How are things
nice.
Going out there?
Good. It's a little cold and rainy today, which is a nice change for me. I've been loving that, but it's going well. I have a cup of Door County coffee here today. Don't tell Robin, but I'm having a cup of the mocha mint that she was vehemently against, but
yes,
it is delicious.
She and I are united on that front.
That's fine. That's fine. It tastes great on a cold day, so I'll enjoy that. But
you know what? You do you.
Yep. We're gonna have some variety here in the cafe, right?
Yeah, we do. I got my standard French press or the, what is it, French roast. So that's what I'm doing.
Perfect. That sounds delicious too. So really excited for our episode today. You know, we talked about organization and unionization with Liz Houston not too long ago, and we're going to touch on that again today. So we have Katie Bradley coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today, and she's an RVT in the San Francisco Bay Area, grew up in San Francisco and is now in Pacifica with her husband and family. She's done GP, but you know, she was kind of drawn to the idea of support staff and how the veterinary community is kind of disrespected, so to speak. So she's kind of gotten into organization and unionization, and she was a big force in a veterinary hospital in the Bay Area that actually was recently shut down by the Mars Corporation. So we're going to talk a lot about that.
And we had a taproom episode about that.
Yes, we did. Yeah. We mentioned that when that was kind of all going down. And so, you know, we kind of want to just take a little bit deeper look into the inner workings of what that looks like inside the clinic and talk about how that kind of gets going and what that process looks like. And so we're going to take a kind of a deep dive into unionization and organization here for veterinary technicians. And there's definitely, you know, some areas, like I know UC Davis has an option for technician unionization. And there are some sparse things that, you know, sparse places, I guess, that you can do that. But I know that there's a lot of interest, and I know a lot of our listeners will really be interested to hear this conversation. So
yeah.
I'm really excited to learn more about it myself.
Well, because we've talked about it as outside looking in. Now we're going to get a look at from the inside looking out.
Absolutely.
And seeing how it actually works.
Absolutely. So I'm super excited about it. So Katie, thank you so much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today. What can we get you for a cup of coffee or a beverage? It's still early-ish here on the West Coast, so can we get you an afternoon cup of coffee?
You know, typically I am a French roast drip coffee. I grind my own beans and all that jazz, and I like my coffee black.
All right. Okay. Yes.
I do. I don't like all the extra stuff.
Nice.
I don't know. You know, sometimes I'll go for a little sugar-free vanilla maybe or some hazelnut, but
very good.
Definitely I'm a French roast black Nice. Kind of girl.
The hard way. I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind, take a couple of minutes here and take us through your career path and where you started, what got you into veterinary medicine, some stops along the way. And then as I kind of said in the outset there, we're going to talk about organization and unionization here. So maybe what got you into that a little bit and where you're at now.
Yeah, totally. All of us, obviously, we get into veterinary medicine. I think majority of us because we love animals and, you know, that's the easiest mm-hmm. response, right? For me, you know, I moved to Pacifica and we had this beautiful flat-coated retriever, the best dog on the face of the planet. And he ended up getting sick. And I didn't know a lot about vet med at that time. This was probably over a decade ago, maybe 11 years ago. And I walked my dog down to the local general practice and there we found out that he actually had a mass in his bladder. And, you know, I was so intrigued by all the options that were there for him as far as oncology. And, you know, we went through all the options to try and help him. And he was too far along in his disease. But anyway, that's when I first was attracted to veterinary medicine. And then I became very forceful with that general practice to hire me because I was not working at the time and I was going to school full time. I was going to move on to nursing with people and, you know, people, right?
Gross.
Yeah, totally gross. And so I just became very forceful with this doctor and I was like, you need to hire me. I want to work here. And he was like, well, I don't really have any positions. So it took a few months and finally he hired me. And from then it was just this, I was just enthralled. I was so excited about every new learning aspect. And I was there for probably about 2 years. And GP medicine, it's very different, right? You know, you're doing vaccines, you see the puppies, you see the kitties, you see some sad cases, you see your local people coming in to, unfortunately, euthanize their pets or find out bad news and then move to the next step. And I'm like, well, what's the next step? Specialty right. services. So then I was really excited about specialty and I ended up going into a San Francisco veterinary specialist with a different dog to find out what was going on with him. And I walked into that hospital and I was just in awe. I have to work here. I have to be here. And so I applied naturally. And when I went through my interview process, they wanted to hire me. I do not have my RVT actually.
Okay.
They wanted to hire me as a veterinary assistant. At that time, we were veterinary technicians. And I said no, because I wasn't comfortable. And, you know, looking around there and just being so in awe with what everybody was doing and the moving and the shaking and the different services that SFES offered, I asked to be put on as a technician assistant. And so I started as a technician assistant. They basically appeased me to hire me on. And then I was promoted to a veterinary assistant after about 3 months. And in the 8 years that I worked for San Francisco veterinary specialists, I worked in as many departments as I could because I wanted to know everything.
Broaden your horizons.
I wanted everything. So I just devoured as much knowledge as I could. I worked in dermatology for a while. I dabbled a little bit in cardio, but was never, made me nervous. And I was like, I ended up really settling in oncology for probably obvious reasons where I had this flat coated retriever. And I'm like, oh, all flat coats get cancer, basically. Like, that makes sense. And so I spent 5-6 years in oncology, really loving that aspect. Loving the constant change in protocol, procedure, and all of that with the medicine that was coming out. And I also worked emergency services. I ended up being the lead technician for emergency services for quite some time. And then after I left SFVS, I ended up going into unionizing as my profession.
Oh, wow.
Now I am an internal organizer for SEIU 521, and it's been really different. I can say for sure that I miss veterinary medicine so much, but this was something else that I learned through the process that really brings me joy and fulfillment, that helping people and like that. That's how I ended up here.
And finding your passion, really, is if that's something that's really
absolutely
near and dear to your heart, that's obviously what you need to do. For our listeners that are maybe not in the know, what is the SCI 12? You're going to have to say that again. SCI 125?
It's the Service Employees International Union. 521 is just the number of the local. I'm working out of Santa Cruz. So that's the union that I'm working for. This is not the same union that was working on the organizing of veterinary medicine.
Okay, so that's a separate...
It is a separate union. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And so just bringing you back to the veterinary profession, where do you see the veterinary technician profession right now? Like, what are some of the challenges that you see that we need to overcome to get where we need to be? You know, unionization aside, like what we're going to get into the unionization of everything. But other than that, like we've talked about tech utilization, we've talked about pay, we've talked about respect. What do you see as one of the big obstacles and where are we headed as a profession?
You know, I find that really the respect for the profession, for everything that technicians do, and the support staff in general. So you have your front desk staff, you have, you know, some people have service coordinators, which are great. You have your RVTs, you have your VAs, you have your tech assistants, even the facility staff. It's the respect that is lacking for all of the things that at this point you guys do. I'm not going to include myself because I'm not doing that anymore, unfortunately. But it starts at the top. It's the respect from management. It's the respect from these large corporations that continue to purchase these veterinary hospitals. What you all do is so important and crucial. You know, you think about the life of a pet that's very short, but the impact that it has on their person, this pet has on their person, the support that this pet brings, and they are part of your family. They're your loved ones. Yeah. And the amount of care and love that people put into their pets, it's exploited. And, you know, all of that to me comes around respect. And if you respect what people like you are doing as technicians and the support staff, you're going to pay those people. You're going to give them the supplies that they need. You're going to make sure that they have enough room to do what they need to get done to take care of this, you know, whatever is going on with the patient. Mm-hmm. And I think, to me, that the top priority should be respect for you and what you do and what you provide. Because a doctor can disseminate information, and yes, they're important, but it's you that does the work, and it's you that builds the bond, and it's you that actually provides the medicine.
Gotcha. That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we had an episode, Dave, I think it was maybe in October or so, some maybe November, somewhere in there, that we talked with Liz Houston about the...
For the second time.
Yeah, for the second time. Yeah. She was our first year anniversary guest. And we talked about the National Veterinary Professionals Union and some of that, you know, how she got involved in that. But why is unionization important to you? What got you so into this that it was something that you, you know, brought to the hospital where you were at? What really sparked that fire for you?
Again, it's the respect issue.
Gotcha.
And for us specifically at San Francisco Veterinary Specialists, we're purchased by VCA and then again by Mars. And it's this whole, you know, passing the buck kind of situation. When the practice began, it was run by doctors and the employees were communicated with. They were well compensated. They had all of the tools and things that they needed to do a good job and provide quality patient care. Yeah. And, you know, as the corporation that owned the hospital got bigger, my instinct is always to swear when I talk about this. So the care and support got smaller and smaller for the staff as the corporation got larger, essentially. And, you know, I think Liz said it in her interview as well. I actually used to call my grandfather and complain all the time. And I was like, Papa, you know, this is so bad. I just don't understand what to do. I said, you know, the hot water went out 3 months ago. We keep complaining. We don't have any hot water. Mm. All of our IV pumps aren't working. We keep getting these refurbished IV pumps, and then they're broken a week later. And we don't have enough hot water pads. We don't have all of these things that we need. And we run out of, you know, 22-gauge catheters and just random stuff. And I used to just call him to vent. And my papa used to like to swear a lot. He's like, Katie, you got to do something about it. You have to organize these people. You're never going to get anything done if you keep complaining. I can't listen to you anymore. I was like, okay, you know, fine. So, you know, that's really what started it. And it's just that constant, just not having what we needed and feeling like we were trying to piece together little things to make something work so that we can do our jobs and take care of our patients.
Yeah.
And it just became too much. And all of us started talking, and then it was like this storm that we couldn't stop, and it just happened. And my grandfather did end up communicating with some people, and we ended up getting in touch with International Longshore Warehouse Union, and they took us on.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because, you know, the lack of supplies and lack of things that work, you know, I think as technicians, we pride ourselves sometimes on being MacGyvers and being able to fix something
being so
that doesn't
resourceful and...
Exactly. But it's so much easier when you have the right equipment. You have the, like, I had this the other day. I placed a U-cath on a female dog with a Foley catheter and didn't have a little Christmas tree to hook it up to a line. So I essentially had to take, without getting too detailed, I had to take the part that you inflate the Foley with and put that into the opening of the Foley catheter and make that be my little Christmas tree. Obviously not ideal, but
right.
at that point, it's what I had to do because we didn't have anything else.
Right.
We pride ourselves on being able to fix that, especially as ER techs. We always pride ourselves on being able to fix something that probably shouldn't be able to be fixed. but it's so much easier when you just have the right equipment. It's so much, like, to do that, I probably spent a good 15 minutes trying to figure out something to do, where that 15 minutes could have easily been spent doing something far more productive.
Right.
Absolutely.
I see that a lot in practices that are kind of owned by people that aren't on the floor and aren't in the building. Those are really hard to tell them we need these things and have them understand it, because, you know, they're not there. It's really hard to relay that information to them.
Yeah.
And Dave, I feel like they're just looking at the bottom line, you know?
Yeah, that's the other part of it.
All the things you could have done and not been behind on other treatments or whatever.
Yeah.
But you're MacGyvering a U-cath. It's like, oh my gosh, give me a break.
So in thinking about the San Francisco Veterinary Specialist and just the unionization of everything, how did that come about for you? Like, were you, you know, I realize that that's kind of what you do now, that's your job, but how did that actually start out? Like, where was the origin of that entire movement to try and unionize that whole practice?
To be completely honest, I had a coworker, my friend, who we'd been trying to get together. She was working nights, I was working days.
Yeah.
And we have kids about the same age. And finally, we found a day where we could hang out. And she called and she's like, let's do pancakes. I said, okay, let's do pancakes. And then she ended up inviting another coworker on the fly. And we sat there and we decided it was time. Mm-hmm. That we weren't going to get anything done any other way.
And what were the issues that you guys were looking at, other than the lack of, you know, supplies and things like that? Was there something else that came about, or was it just simply the lack of supplies?
It was the lack of supplies, lack of working supplies. It was, you know, people were getting moved around on their schedules. It was the pay. It was the fact that, you know, a lot of us, I mean, at that point, I had been there for 5 years, I think, and I'd had maybe one review. And yeah, and I had to basically go and apply to other jobs to get an increase in wages and to sort of do the work of the hospital for them so that I could get a wage increase that I hadn't received for several years. And it's just everybody was underpaid. Everybody was being mistreated. And then come to find out after we all got together, you know, there's this whole division that was happening between the technical staff and the front desk staff, where we were sort of being put at odds and fighting with each other. And it's always somebody else's fault. It's always, you know, this is your fault. This is what's going on. But really what it came down to was that management wasn't disseminating information that was the same. We had different protocols for the same thing that was supposed to happen. We had some management that was just making up their own rules that were completely illegal, and we had no idea.
Oh boy.
Because people are just being complacent, and you know, there's this whole terrible turnover issue. Anyway, so there was a multitude of things. It definitely wasn't just the fact that we didn't have the supplies that we needed. It was very much just an overall, just became a terrible place to work at. And it was such a wonderful hospital when I started there. It was the place where you wanted to be. If you worked at SFES, you had it. And you had it going on. You were smart. You learned. You got to be a part of all these specialties. It was a really special place.
Yeah. What made you stay there? What made you fight for that? What made you not just say, you know what, this place is terrible and I'm not going to stay here anymore? What kept you in that place to do that as opposed to just leaving?
Because the more I looked around, the more it was happening everywhere. And to start new at another hospital where I was going to get treated the same, it sounded terrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, to watch SFES sink without trying to save it was not in the cards for me. I wanted it to be better. I wanted to be there with my coworkers whom I loved so much and learned from and developed in that place and became something that I didn't know was possible. I was a lead emergency technician as a VA. And how did I do that? I learned from my coworkers who were there and taught me and took the time. And so to just leave and dump it was not something that I wanted to do. I wanted it to be great again. And
That's amazing because, I mean, me personally, I've been in that situation where I'm like, you know what? I'm not being treated right and I'm out. It's amazing that you stayed for your coworkers.
Well, it was for all of us, you know, to make it a better place for all of us. And we wanted to retain people. We wanted people to stay. I mean, and this was the kind of hospital that people kept leaving and coming back because they were like, well, at least I like you guys. Yeah, Everywhere else is screwed up, but at least I like you guys and I can come here and be happy to work with you and we can support each other. We had such a great support system that people always just came back. And it was such an interesting thing to me. And it definitely played a part in not wanting to leave.
Yeah.
and so Katie, thinking about that process and getting all these people together and you know, coming together for this, how did the bargaining process go? Like, take us through that a little bit, because was it difficult to come to the table? Was it difficult to get any sort of response or just what did that look like?
During the initial organization process, we were very secretive. Because we didn't want management to find out that we were all coming together. And so by the time we ended up voting in the union and then getting to the bargaining table, we hadn't had any sort of, that's not true. We did have confrontation with management, but it was terrifying. And we were all terrified. It was about really voicing what was happening at this table, sitting across from a bunch of really high-paid lawyers and people who just weren't on the treatment room floor with us didn't even work in our hospital, to be completely honest. So it was terrifying. But once we got over that hurdle, it ended up just feeling natural. You know, we had a really great support system with the ILWU, and we had a really wonderful lawyer on our side who just was very down to earth and was like, look, you know, these are the proposals that we're going to do. This is how a contract works. And we had a really great two organizers, actually, who explained everything to us so that we weren't just terrified all the time. And then it ended up, we were just free-flowing at the bargaining table, where we had no qualms with voicing how we felt at any particular time. And if those high-paid lawyers had it wrong, we definitely stood up and told them what for. which, you know, some days really we didn't get very far because we were doing that back and forth. But it's a very interesting process. And, you know, to be completely honest, I'm not sure how else to explain it. We didn't get to meet very often, and they definitely drug things out. And Mars was represented by one of the best legal teams to break up unions, Jackson Lewis. And they did their job, that's for sure.
I hate that there's a subset of lawyers that's their job is to crush.
Oh yeah.
People like you and what you guys were trying to accomplish. All the bad lawyer jokes just come right to mind of you know, like what's a lawyer buried neck deep in the sand or in Good Start, you know? It just crushes me that there's a group of people that's their job is to crush the spirit of people trying to just achieve a better workplace. That right. just kills me.
Yeah.
And you know, it's so interesting too, because that my grandfather, who actually ended up convincing me, he was like, you just got to do it. He was a lawyer, and he was a plaintiff's lawyer. He did start out with the ILWU and working under Harry Bridges, and he's got a long history. But he lived his life sticking up for people, and he lived his life, you know, pointing the finger at the bad guy and speaking up when people didn't feel like they had a voice. You know, I definitely fed off of that. And, you know, I was very disappointed to see that there were actual real law firms that really just were out there to just squish down anyone in their path for a dime. And that's exactly what Jackson Lewis was doing. And is still doing, actually.
So going through that process, like what was the response from your vets? Like, how were they supportive of you? Were they just kind of off to the side saying they're doing their own thing, or were they involved as well?
You know, I think that's the one place where we messed up as the bargaining unit. When I say the bargaining unit, it's the staff, so the technical staff and support staff. I feel like we didn't try hard enough to rope them in and really tell them how this could make a difference for them as well. Because obviously in hospitals, you're constantly understaffed. And there's a constant rotating door, and you lose really valuable people because they're not feeling respected in their workplace and they can go somewhere else. And, you know, we had a lot of relief workers, and relief workers have a place, unfortunately, because there's such a high rotation in the field. And so I think if we had done a better job of being inclusive of these doctors, of our veterinarians, we might have had a better chance. And there were some that were supportive, mostly in secret. You know, we had a few of them that were feeding us information about these secret doctors meetings that were going on. We had some that really were not supportive. And we had a lot who just literally stood by and said nothing. Yeah. And I think that was probably one of the most frustrating things, because there's some of these veterinarians where you just have so much respect for them. You know, you have your small group where you're just like, oh, don't take your dog or your cat to anyone but so-and-so. This is the best doctor. I think that's where we fell short, truthfully.
Interesting. Are you aware of any other instances or other examples? And I mean, you can name names or you can elect not to if you do know of any, but where this kind of thing has happened to other veterinary hospitals or what have you, that this is a pattern or this isn't just an isolated incident?
I'm not actually aware. I think in this specific instance, SFVS was the first unionized veterinary hospital, and definitely the first union under Mars. You know, they really did try and did make an example out of us.
Sure.
I haven't seen it anywhere else yet.
Gotcha.
This is the practice that, you know, because of the failed unionization or because of the failed negotiations, they just decided to up and close the hospital. Like, how did that come across to you guys? Like, what did you think about with that?
I think initially there was a feeling of defeat. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then after that, because we're all still so close, I mean, this whole process has brought us all so close, even with people that we were not expecting that we would get along with or be friends with.
Sure.
The shared trauma.
Yeah, it's very true. You know, and after that, we all talked about it and we're just like, you know, we actually won, because now this is another hospital that Mars doesn't own. Mm. And they were so terrified of us that instead of bargaining with us, because out of the whole process of bargaining, Mars VCA had several people sub out or leave on their bargaining team. So we had outlasted almost all of them. Hmm. Our bargaining team was so strong and so bonded. We showed up to every meeting every single time. We were on time. We were ready to talk. And it was all five of us. And there was a small rotation where we had extras for people who were going to school or whatever. But for the most part, it was the same core people every single time for 3 years. Wow. And I think they finally figured out that we weren't going to leave and then we weren't going to back down. And I think that really was the point where they were just like, you know, we're not getting through to them. And they just sold the hospital.
Hmm. Mm. Are you aware of any other, either like pending negotiations that are going on right now or anybody else that's kind of going through some measure of this process or any other type of unionized veterinary facilities that have actually had success and kind of gotten through the bargaining process and have contracts?
We actually, so ILWU did organize CRVS, which is Columbia River Veterinary Services.
Right, that's right. I did hear about that one. Okay.
Mm-hmm. They got a contract. It was so exciting. We were like, oh my gosh, there's hope.
That's, I want to say Seattle, Washington. Is that correct?
Vancouver.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And then that is not owned by VCA. Mm. For the life of me, I can't remember who that hospital is owned by right now. But then there's NWVS, which is a VCA hospital. They're Northwest Veterinary. They're in Clackamas, Oregon. And they're still in negotiations. Things are pretty rough there right now, from what I hear. So they're still fighting. They're still working it, and it's the same crew that we were bargaining with. Hmm. So they have the same lawyer, Rick Vitarelli. He's special. so he's the lead negotiator for Jackson Lewis.
You know, we're talking about corporate practices and things like that. What about like the privately owned practices? I would imagine they probably don't have the money to afford the really high priced lawyers for something like this. But what does the unionization look like for like quote unquote the mom and pop type hospitals?
You know, that's a great question. And to be honest, I'm not really sure. Okay. I think, you know, generally speaking, these mom and pop places, they pay better than specialty. At least that's what I've been told. You know, I worked relief at a couple of the spots locally in Pacifica, and you know, the workload is different, the atmosphere is different, which we talked a little bit about earlier.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that it's the same sort of mentality or necessity for unionization. Not to say that they shouldn't, but it's just not on the radar right now, as far as I know.
And you know, when I think about being a veterinary technician, one of the things that we you know, certainly the profession we always compare ourselves to is human nursing, because it's probably the closest thing that we can compare to. And the American Nurse Association, you know, they have quite a large, I guess, faction of members, shall we say. So, like, was that any sort of roadmap or any sort of help in terms of how to go about things to try to get this done? Or was it just so separate it really didn't compare that you would use, like, unionization in the human nursing field as a model to compare to?
We did look at some of their contract language.
Okay.
When we were bargaining, just in the way of schedules and differentials and things of that nature, we really did try to keep ourselves separate, because in the veterinary field, you do so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have a phlebotomist that comes in and places the catheter.
Good point.
You know, it's like everybody does it. And, you know, in working in oncology, it's like, I'm placing the catheter, I'm pushing the chemo, I'm watching the patient afterward. It's me throughout the whole process. It's me discharging the patient. It's me going through those discharges with the owner and discussing the whole process. Mm-hmm. So we really did try and keep those two separate. Although, you know, like I said, we looked at some of the contract language for some of these nurses, and it does still apply. You know, when you're talking about scheduling, when you're talking about hazard pay, you're dealing with hazardous waste, and you're dealing with radiology, and, you know, we don't have a radiology technician that comes in and takes our x-rays for her,
right,
for us. We're
right.
doing it. You know, it seemed to make more sense to us at the bargaining table to keep those kinds of things separate.
Yeah.
And at that point, we actually scolded the Jackson Lewis team to say, you know, we are not human nurses. We are not classified as that. And we do all-encompassing medical work. We don't just do this specified one thing. We are not technicians that just place catheters. We are not technicians who just do radiographs. So we tried to make that very clear. So,
and when we're thinking about the bargaining table, let's kind of go back a little bit here. What sort of things were you fighting for? Like better pay, better? Obviously, we've talked a little bit about equipment and supplies. But what are some of the things that maybe those that are listening out there weren't realizing that you guys were fighting for?
Well,
you don't have to tell me everything. But
like, there's a million things, first of all. Secondly, actually, one of the very first things that we passed a proposal on was for radiology. We did not want to be in the same room taking radiographs.
Yeah.
Simple ask.
Yeah.
We want our patients to be sedated and safe. We don't want to struggle with these, you know, patients and further injure them, or, you know, you have cardiac patients and all that stuff where maybe it might be an exception, but you're going to give them Lasix, you're going to give them Torb, you're going to do all this stuff. Like, just give them enough so that they can lie there and be comfortable, and we're not breaking arms so that they're spread out enough to get a good image. You know, that was one of the first things that we asked for, to give you an example.
And there are some states where that's law. New York comes to mind, where you're not allowed to be in the room with them.
Yeah, so that's already the deal.
And did you use something like the laws in New York as your guideline
Absolutely.
For that? Awesome.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah. And they did end up agreeing. And at that point, one of the, I'm blanking on his title right now. He was the one of the directors for VCA in our area. And he's like, oh, well, we're already doing this in other hospitals. And he completely spoke out of line at the bargaining table. So you could see all the lawyers look at him like, shh, you know. And we're like, why aren't we doing this here? We're supposed to be specialty. We're supposed to be this prestigious practice. Anyway, we ended up agreeing that patients should be sedated for x-rays. We should not be radiated for no reason. There would be other circumstances with a critical patient where we would have to run in, obviously, and take the x-ray and then run out. There's always those kinds of cases, especially on emergency services, you know, especially with our respiratory cases or whatever. So yeah, that was one of the first proposals that we talked about. Obviously, there's always pay scale, schedules, better benefits, but it started out with simple things. And yeah. It started out like we asked for a bulletin board in our break room so that we can notify each other what was going on with the union.
Hmm.
And it was just a simple thing, you know? And then it was simple asks across the table where it's like, hey, can you fix the hot water? Is there some sort of problem as to why that hasn't been fixed in the last year and a half? You know, it's just little things. And yeah. When you're at the bargaining table, sometimes that's a chance to just voice like, hey, there's all these things going on. Did you actually know? Are you reading our emails? Are you listening to our voicemails? Are you going to respond? And it gives you a chance to kind of speak up and be like, hey, so this is what's happening. And it also gives them a chance to respond.
Yeah.
It hopefully, and what I've learned now as a union organizer is that there can be a dialogue between the staff and management where you just get things done. Fix yeah. it. Let's do it.
Katie, I know Dave asked kind of specifically about veterinarians earlier, but in terms of like your, well, I'll say your colleagues or your support staff mm-hmm. colleagues, were there people, coworkers of yours, non-DVMs that were against this that, you know, or, I mean, I understand there may be some that, you know, didn't want to go to the bargaining table or didn't want to have that level of involvement, but did you have any coworkers that were like absolutely no union for me or like that were, you know, in that frame of mind?
We did. Okay. There was a small number because we have open conversations and that's part of bargaining and that's part of, sorry.
We got another guest.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
It's okay, Dave. It's not the tap room.
So, you know, there's always going to be somebody who doesn't like conflict.
Sure.
And yeah. I think that was a lot of the issue. And then there's also distaste from, we had a couple of people who were a part of other unions and had bad experiences. And so just associated all of those bad feelings with unionization in general. But generally speaking, we had a really high rate of support when we voted in the union. It was a 3-1. And I think we had 115 members vote.
Wow. Hmm. Okay. That's pretty impressive.
So kind of as we're getting towards our hour, what's next? Where do we go from here? Like, are there plans to, like, I know you said this is your primary job now. Are you working with other hospitals to try and create unions in other hospitals or what's your next steps?
You know, I wish that I could just organize veterinary hospitals for the rest of my life and talk with people like you guys and, you know, just be a central part of that veterinary medicine that I miss so much and unionizing and making life better for veterinary medicine. That hasn't happened yet. However, I'm not counting it out. But I think really there's been this whole wait and see with people in veterinary medicine. And truth be told, everybody just needs to step out, and the more people, the better, because, you know, it's the one thing that I've learned working with unions and trying to unionize and unionizing our hospital is that all of us together are so much stronger than one person here and there. It just is so important to not just sit there and take the abuse. And I can't stress that enough. And, you know, I'll use the R word again, which is respect. And truthfully, we need to demand it. And you need to demand respect for yourself in the workplace and the work that you do. And I think that as far as what's next, people need to speak out and be about it mm-hmm. and stop waiting to see what happens with someone else.
Yeah.
You have to make things happen for yourself. And, for, you know, if you like your hospital enough, you like your coworkers enough, you love what you do, because that's what we all love what we do, right? We all love veterinary medicine, the constant change, that it just, it's so, I just I can't tell you how much I miss it. Anyway, so, you know, it you just got to stick up for that. And yeah. I just feel that, you know, RVTs, VAs, people are just leaving this industry. It's just this mass exodus. I mean, and there's more veterinarians being made like on a daily basis. And, you know, it's like, there has to be some change. We can't just let companies like Mars just take over, and it's just suffocating veterinary medicine. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like. It's suffocating what we love and what we love to do and patient care. And it's just so unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something has to change.
Yeah. I agree for the health and longevity of the field. I think so. You know, thinking about, so you mentioned two other hospitals a bit ago that had contracts. If we were to say, you know, some of these ripples turn into big waves and we were able to get, you know, more unionization in our field, do you see this being like individual contracts in hospitals, or do you see maybe more of a profession-wide union, so to speak, that all veterinary technicians could join, or does it take a lot more of these individual contracts to kind of lead up to that?
I think that it takes a lot more of the individual contracts to lead up to it.
Gotcha.
But what's going to happen is, because there's this one hospital that is actually they have a contract, this is the starting point for everyone else. Mm-hmm. This is a contract that has gotten through with management. They've agreed on all of these proposals. They've agreed on this contract, the members and the management. There is something that already lives. And with that comes so much more. We can reuse these proposals. We can repurpose them. We can amend them to our certain areas. I mean, the more hospitals that organize and the better deals that we get, we can use those proposals throughout, so that eventually it's going to become something much larger, and where we can have, you know, here's this region, here's this contract. But right now, because it's so fresh, everything is so green, we need more contracts to build better language and to build a base.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
So before we go, is there anything that we haven't talked about tonight, or questions that you wish we would have asked you that you want to get a message out to the rest of our listeners, our caffeinators out there? Is there anything else we need to talk about before we go?
The only thing that I'll say is that, you know, speaking from SFES, or what used to be SFES, is that, you know, Mars Corporation is one of the industry's largest employers. And the fact that they'd rather spend millions to suppress their workers' rights is just astonishing. And we really need to think about patient care and about I keep forgetting I'm not a technician anymore. Thinking about the technical staff and about the support staff, and there's got to be a bend in this and a break in the way that things are going right now.
Yeah, I think I remember Liz saying the same thing. We're like approaching a critical mass, and
yeah,
something's got to give at some point. Yeah.
So I mean, I'm hopeful, and I really do hope that people start sticking up for themselves and for their position and for what is so wonderful about veterinary medicine and everything that's about veterinary medicine, I should say.
Well,
all right, guys.
Katie, thank you so much for coming by and talking to us today. Dave has one last question for you.
One final question.
Okay.
Jeff, which one of these three do you want me to do?
I say...
One of these I came up with on my own.
Oh, good.
I like number one.
You like number one? That's the one I came up with on my own.
Nicely done.
Oh, perfect.
All right. Okay. All right. So, Katie, your Vet Tech Cafe Would You Rather question. Are you ready for it?
Oh, do it. Hit me up.
Would you rather constantly have something sticky, like tree sap, on your hands, or constantly have something like a stray eyelash in your eye?
Oh my gosh, those are terrible.
That's why we have these questions.
Oh, sticky. Sticky like sap.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I would go the same direction.
Right? Like something in your eye is like, oh, God, that's awful.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, I agree.
No.
I came up with this because around Christmas time, and it's notorious that I'm not a huge Christmas fan. Jeff is like Santa Claus over there.
Oh, goodness.
But the real trees, when I have to move real trees and I get that tree sap stuck in my hand, it just, it's the worst.
It's there for days.
It's there for days.
And then you smell like Christmas for days. It's amazing days. That's why I would rather have tree sap on my hands.
But I don't think I wouldn't like either one of these things.
No, it's terrible. Both of those are terrible options.
Yes, agreed.
Well, but I definitely choose the sap.
I love it.
I would just be constantly washing my hands.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Or picking stray eyelashes out of your eyes with sticky hands.
Well, I mean, at this point, we're all using hand sanitizer like 25 times a day. That's so, you know, the alcohol will take it off eventually, right?
True. Yeah, you would hope. Well, Katie, thank you so much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today and
sticking through our technical difficulties.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Thank you as well for that. Good one, Dave.
Yeah.
And talking to us about unionization and where it's at and kind of where it's headed and your experience with it, because I mean, Dave and I see all the time on social media, people mention it, people talk about it, people ask about it, and it's wonderful to kind of hear some insight from actually being in a situation where these kinds of things have happened, and really for anybody else that's listening that may be thinking like, man, I want to do that, like, you know, kind of how to start that or you know what path to take. So it's really really great conversation.
Well, and it kind of goes back to what she said of, you know, you got to start demanding respect. You know, if you don't want to go the unionization route, you should at least demand respect for yourself.
Right.
And if unionization comes out of that, then so be it. But
right.
Yeah, you got to start demanding respect.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and people need to bond together. There's all this whispering and people get mad, and then there's this whole back and forth. And really, everybody has to stick together. That's what it is. It's like you guys are more powerful together than you are as one person.
Yeah.
And as frustrating as that is, it's just so crucial. And we did find that with each other. And we just, you know, like I said, we bonded. And I'm still texting with all of my people to this day. And, you know, VCA closed in pretty much in December, and I haven't been there since July, and it's just this bond. Yeah. It's important. Build it.
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent.
All right. Well, thanks again, Katie. It was wonderful to talk to you, and maybe we'll talk more about this down the road if we get to where, you know, these things are kind of happening, or if you have any, you know, involvement in any of these kinds of things, we'd love to keep the conversation going and help people, you know, understand what's going on. So thank you very much.
Yeah, it's absolutely my pleasure. Let me know if you guys have any questions or if anybody else has any questions. I'm always down to talk about stuff.
Awesome.
Will do. All right. Well, thanks again. And Caffeinators, you guys have a great day, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Hey, Caffeinators, we would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As you guys are well aware by now, we often talk about difficult issues that face our profession, and we chat with colleagues and leaders in our field who have strong opinions of these issues. Those opinions expressed by either Dave and I as the hosts or those opinions expressed by our guests are their opinions alone and do not represent any other person, any other business or institution or any other entity with or within the scope of veterinary medicine. If you have any questions relating to this, please feel free to email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. You can check out our website, vettechcafe.com. And please, whatever podcast form you're using to listen to our episodes, like us, follow us there, like us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And lastly, have a great day, Caffeinators. You guys are awesome. Bye, guys.